This hour of the program brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Check them out online at tvacreditunion.com. They got you covered. You've been hearing you can even earn rewards with a debit card when you use it as credit with the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. They just think of everything. It's the official credit union of 3 and Out. Go to tvacreditunion.com, become a member. You'll start realizing, if you haven't already, how many branches they have all around. If you need to pop in somewhere, their branches are open. Just wear a mask if you're in one of the counties that are making you do that. And, yeah, you know, they'll take great care
of
you.
It's easy. $5.
To that. Yep. Easy peasy with the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union, longtime sponsor of 3 and Out. All right, let's go to the phone lines. 865-546-8200. If you want to weigh in on anything Tennessee football, give us a call. It's 865-546-8200. Up first, we have the one and only, Philly. What's up, Phil? You're on 3 and Out.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Philly.
How y'all doing?
My eye's still bothering me.
Davey's injured. Yeah, he's hot. His eye's bothering him, and he's got a mosquito bite.
Couple of mosquito bites, but...
The trifecta.
I understand he's getting the Oklahoma information. I'm glad we didn't play the Rattler. He'd probably pass about 500 on us. We would be crying on him.
Yeah.
No. He wouldn't pass for 500. I'm not saying he wouldn't have a good game. It was Missouri State. Now, I just want to see him against a couple of Big 12 teams before I give him the Heisman.
Well, I mean, the Big 12 don't look too good now, do they? I mean,
top heavy, I'll say. They look top heavy. I'm anxious to see Baylor if they're going to be worth anything. But right now, Oklahoma and Texas look pretty good, and some other teams you thought might be good look pretty bad.
You look at the SEC; still could probably get two in the playoff. If of course they're going to beat each other up, that's what the big problem will probably be.
I think that's probably going to happen everywhere. Again, I don't know how good Baylor is going to be. I do think it's definitely possible that Texas or Oklahoma, one of them could go undefeated, the other could have one loss. You could have no SEC teams with zero or one loss. They could all have two. ACC looks like that's going to be – I'm going to guess an undefeated Clemson versus one-loss North Carolina or Notre Dame in the ACC championship. And then if the Big Ten and Pac-12 join in with an eight-game schedule, maybe Ohio State can go 8-0 and get in. But I don't know how you judge that if you're the playoff committee. If they only play eight games, you know, and they duck a difficult game. You know, same in the Pac-12. I don't know what they're going to do. But, I think it's possible right now for any conference to get two in.
Well, even the Big Ten with eight games is better than the ACC. I mean, let's get real.
Top to bottom.
ACC is awful. Yeah. It's awful.
Yeah, I mean, ACC gets a boost this year. They added Notre Dame. They looked okay against Duke. I think they're going to be, you know, formidable. But they're going to also benefit from playing ACC teams. Notre Dame has to go undefeated every year to have a chance at making the playoff. This is the year they could lose one game and probably still get in.
Yeah, well, we're a week away. How many people are going to be able to play? Y'all have any idea?
No, I mean, there's rumors that people, you know, are still out, I guess, starting early this week, which would mean that they're back ready to play or that they're back to play, but may not be ready, like would have had to miss practice the week of the game.
Yeah, Philly, so you had 44 out for the scrimmage, not this past Saturday, but the one before. Everybody who had COVID and recovers or was in contact tracing should be back by Sunday, but then you've had a couple more cases of contact tracing and positives where you probably are going to have some guys out until maybe the Friday before South Carolina. Hmm. So we'll just have to wait and see.
How many of these players are living off campus?
No idea.
When you say half of them are?
I'd say more.
Wow. That's probably part of the problem, isn't it?
Not necessarily if they were living by themselves. I have no idea, Philly, because it makes no sense. The rules for exposure are you have to be with somebody for 15 minutes or more consecutively within 6 feet. So they're
not, or if you share a dwelling, right?
Yeah, or if you share. I don't. So if they just get these guys their own. Well, and I don't even know about that. Like if they just have their own room. And they can show that they're rotating through the common area of whatever unit that is. I don't know if that counts or not. But if these guys had their own place, which the university could do easily. Like, the university isn't full like it normally is, right? I mean, they moved everyone out of Massey to, like, put them in hotels. They've got kids in hotels all over the place, not to mention all the kids that just didn't come back. So I have no idea why, at least, at the very least, when they had the 44 issue, it's going to turn into the 300. When they had the 44, the 30, when they had the 34, why didn't they realize that we can't do this? Because they shouldn't be together more than 15 minutes within 6 feet in a meeting at football practice or anywhere else for that matter, in the weight room or anything. And at practice, they're outside, they're moving around, they're never standing beside the same dude for more than 15 minutes at practice outside without their mask on. So it doesn't make any sense why they would have any contact tracing exposures if they just follow their protocols. And it seems like that's what other schools are doing. I don't know why we're not doing that.
Yeah. Cade Mays, I understand why Jeremy Pruitt's upset. Do you think maybe Greg Sankey has something to do with this?
Maybe. I don't think they like players going from a school in the SEC to another school in the SEC. It feels different when they go back home to Michigan or they go to some small school somewhere else.
I agree with that, especially if there's kind of an obvious, this feels very sincere on the part of Cade Mays and the Mays family. Given all that's happened with him at Georgia, I'm not going to say no, Philly. I'd be surprised if this was the one Greg Sankey decided to veto.
What do you think is going to come down? They're going to be dropped for game time?
I'm trying to remember. Aubrey Solomon, I think, was the Wednesday before the first game last year. And I don't know who this comes from. Like, does the NCAA inform Tennessee and Tennessee can go public immediately or sit on it as long as they want to? Like, is it at all possible that Tennessee already has the news and just doesn't want to release it yet?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's possible. Like, Tennessee might have got, hey, yeah, you're right. It's a nonsense season as far as eligibility. He's clear, and he just doesn't want Will Muschamp to know that we're rolling out Cade Mays on Series 1. Or did they get bad news and they're going to go for some super secret third appeal? And if so, can we file that quickly, please?
So, this Jesse Spragans is part of their the freshman that's going to play on an offensive line. That'll probably be their number one sub. And you think he's one of them?
Yeah, Javontez, he's apparently had a really good fall camp. I was actually just looking at this. Obviously, you know, you're going to see a lot of Brandon Kennedy at center, Jameer Johnson, Wanye, hopefully Cade Mays. Pruitt singled out James Robinson, a freshman from Montgomery who had he's had a really good camp. Obviously, you're going to see Darnell Wright, Trey Smith. Kayron Calvert played a lot last year. Jerome Carvin played a lot last year. But as far as freshmen, it seems like it's going to be James Robinson and Javontez Spragans. They also really liked Chris Aperogene last year. He redshirted, so I guess there's a chance you could see him a little bit this year. He's, again, a redshirt freshman from IMG Academy.
So they've moved D. Beckwith to running back?
I think it's just a little cross-training, yeah. He played Wildcat quarterback in high school a lot, and obviously, if you're a Wildcat quarterback, you're basically a running back, so I think that's just more of a, hey, if we've got this guy out and this guy gets banged up, how many options do we have? Can we do some different things? So I think every school's having to do it right now, Philly. You got to cross-train guys on the offensive and defensive line. Obviously, Kavaris Crouch played a little bit of running back last year. Jeremy Banks has played running back before. But, yeah, I think this is just get everybody as ready for any position as possible.
Well, he's a big old kid, and if you're on the goal line, I'd rather have him in there running a wildcat or doing something size Gitmo, kind of like he's a, Tebow.
I'm with you. Especially in short yardage, I'm a big fan of the Wildcat if you've got guys who can execute, because it's just one extra blocker every single time. The quarterback's not handing it off and just out of the play. You direct snap. Maybe you've got a jet sweep option, a fullback option. Obviously, run behind the fullback. It just gives you some more opportunity with that added blocker. I can't remember if did Crouch take any Wildcat snaps last year? I don't think he did. But Beckwith would be very comfortable in a shotgun setting with, two fullbacks halfway back either side. You just pound it in there.
Is that Jimmy Holiday playing any Wildcat, or do y'all?
I think they said they want to focus with him at receiver first, and then depending on how quickly he picks that up, I don't know if that's going to be maybe a year two thing or if we might see that later on in the year. Obviously, he played quarterback in high school, but I don't know. It's weird, Philly, because with so many guys out of practice, you're getting your normal amount of reps at your position a lot faster. So in a way, you're able to cross-train guys easier because you're not taking away, let's say you get four reps every drill, but well, now that everything's halved out, you're getting eight, so you're done twice as fast. Maybe that's going to allow guys to be cross-trained and a little bit more available at other positions.
Does David still feel bad about the Tennessee season this year?
Of course he does. He's a curmudgeon.
I wouldn't say bad. I would just say it's going to be average, par for the course.
5-5
Yep.
I got 6-4 Philly.
Gitmo. That's just one thing that just keeps coming back in my mind every time I get on the telephone now.
Sounds like you had a pretty good scrimmage there, Philly.
I will say for my 5-5 prediction, that is
beating Florida and losing to Vanderbilt.
I was going to say, assuming that JG is playing quarterback for the entirety of the season.
Well, the first game, guys, they have to win that first game, or it will be ugly around here, and you know it, and I know it.
Yeah, it feels that way.
Because that's a winnable game, and they should win it. They're probably a little bit better than South Carolina.
I think they showed that last year. I'll say this. It'll be bad if you lose to South Carolina, but it really is going to depend on the rest of the schedule. If you lose to South Carolina and then reel off three straight, lose to Alabama, reel off 4 out of 5 to close the season, I think people would be happy with 7-3, even if it did come with a loss to South Carolina.
Oh, yeah, sure.
No, I'm just saying.
Even 6-4, but it's kind of like last year. Auburn. Those are the big swing games to me.
It's going
to
feel bad. It's going to feel like last year because you left a win on the table. I don't like that. That said, it is obviously a very weird time. I'm anxious to see who all's out for Tennessee, who all's out for South Carolina. If we go in there with half our starters and contact tracing quarantine, I'm going to grade on a curve against South Carolina. I'm not going to just – I realize that you beat them by 20 last year. I'm not calling the game a fluke, but everything kind of went your way after the first play. And South Carolina did beat Georgia.
Yeah.
They've got some talent. It's just, they have to get really lucky, and Tennessee had to make their own luck a little bit against South Carolina. But I don't know. I'm excited about that game.
Yeah, and that'd be interesting to see. They'll have that Gamecock crawling down there. What is the SEC going to do about noise policy? Are they just going to pop in stuff, or what are they going to do? Do y'all know?
I'm guessing on TV they'll probably have that ambient crowd noise.
They said they can play stuff in the stadium until the quarterback's, ready to take the snap.
In stadium, they can play crowd noise, videos, whatever, until the quarterback gets under center or, I guess, set to take a shotgun snap.
Huh. They better have some decibel, limit, though, or something, or it's just going to get worse. It's going to be pretty bad.
Well, one more thing, guys. Looks like all those people Calipari put in the NBA do better in the NBA than do at Kentucky, don't they?
Funny how that works. We'll come back.
You hate to see it.
Get right back to the phone lines. Do you?
No.
Next. Hour 2 continues live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fan Run Radio. Pick you up some White Claw this week as you get set for College Football Week 3, the final appetizer before the Vols kick it off with the rest of the SEC on September the 26th.
10 days from today.
10 days. Yesterday was Hank T Day. Got me excited.
Or Jalen Hyatt Day.
Either one.
Justin Hunter, Joey Kent.
On Tennessee's roster, it escapes me
was
now.
Bryce Brown 11?
No. Oh, Bryce Brown. That sounds right.
That is so Davey to immediately dismiss it and then go, oh, wait, no, think of the wrong person.
No, usually I won't correct myself. I'll just stick with the immediate.
That's true.
And then you're just like, are you right? And I was like,
he was
know.
Also 11. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Jay on the phone lines. 865-546-8200 if you want to weigh in on Tennessee football. What's up, Jay? You're on 3 and Out.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, you know, Philly was right. I think it will be bad if we lose this game. I think a lot of fans will be upset. And obviously it depends on how it's done and how we lose, I think. But how do we differentiate, guys, between and let's just, like I said, unless it's just obvious, how do you differentiate between bad coaching or, like y'all was talking about yesterday, I was listening, we have players who missed 28 days because of contact tracing. Like, and that's just, it's not an excuse. We're not Butch Jones here, but it's just the reality. I mean, you know, you lose that amount of time, and not everybody, but even if you lose 2 weeks, I mean, that's a lot in terms of preparing for a season. How do you differentiate between, well, did Pruitt just not, do we not coach the game well, or did just our circumstances just, we just didn't have the right preparation? See what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's difficult. The first thing is there's kind of the ready to play question. Were they ready to play? I think if they come out with, like, it doesn't matter. I mean, these guys have been in the program. They've been around the culture. If they come out with no energy like they did against Georgia State, like, to me, that, I don't care how many days they've missed. Like, they've been over there. They've been training. They've been working. Like, they should be excited to play the football game. I mean, I coach rec league 10-year-old fast pitch girls softball players. We don't even practice much once the games start. They still show up twice a week excited to play ball, right? Like, these guys live and breathe this. They should be excited to play football. If we have a couple mental mistakes here and there, or if we're a little sloppy, those are more the things that I would chalk up to, well, you know, prep time not being what it should have been. If we have to call a timeout because a receiver ran way out to the right hand side, and then all of a sudden JG's like, man, you're on the wrong, you're supposed to be over here and play clock, and we take time out. That's the kind of stuff that normally I would be like, good grief, we're making all these mental mistakes. It's bad coaching. How's that guy not know where to line up? But in this case, as Houston said, I think you have to grade on a curve a little bit. And, you know, if it's Jalen Hyatt especially, right? If he runs the wrong side of the formation, if, you know, obviously there's still some element of coaching there though, right? Like, you've got to make sure that you put your guys in position to do things they can do. Don't ask them to do things that you know will lead to a bunch of mistakes. That's the kind of fine balance you run. But then that goes to kind of the next portion of the football game where it's like, man, this offense, if you can't, it's going to be really tempting, but I do think you need to take a step back and not say things like, man, this offense is really vanilla today against South Carolina. Well, it might just have to be because that's the stuff the guys can line up and run well. You know, you might not be able to come up with this concept and then counter to this one and then hit them over here with this one because the guys can't execute that because they haven't been around each other enough. So I think it'll be – it's great that Tennessee plays two teams out of the gate that they're definitely more talented than. They should be able to line up, play their – you know, play –
go
Jeremy
vanilla.
Pruitt,
yeah.
Football, and beat those two teams. You know, you wouldn't want to play A&M and Auburn out of the gate because I feel like those two teams, you're somewhere in that range of we're more talented a few places here. They're way more talented a few places here. We got a lot where who knows? Like, those are the games that hopefully by that point in the season, you'll be able to run some more complicated stuff offensively and defensively. But anyway, that's my take on it. I'm sure – you know, it's more of an opinion question, but that's the way I'm going to approach it.
Yeah, for me, Jay, it's, you know, does the scheme make sense? Does clock management make sense? Does, you know, the substitutions make sense? What if we're making mistakes, what kind of mistakes are they? You know, if JG throws a wide open pass to Jalen Hyatt and he drops it, like, I'm not going to put that on the coaching staff, right? If Ty Chandler pops a big run and then somebody comes up from behind him and punches the ball out, you know, depending on how he was holding, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to say, oh, the coaching staff, you know, how many players are out? Who was having to start this game that might not have to start normally?
Yeah, that is a big factor as well. Looking at it from Jeremy Pruitt, it's his third year. How well have they developed these guys is another thing that is going to be harder than usual to compare just based off the circumstances. But, I mean, is it a situation where I mean, we talk about this offensive line supposed to take a big jump whenever you look at the stars across the board. Is in the trenches, are you just being less physical than your opponent in South Carolina? I mean, if I just see the guys just being whipped from a standpoint of, all right, they're just getting beat off the snap, I'm going to probably put that more on coaching at that point. And I think that kind of goes more into what Nate was saying about just being ready and having that sense of awareness. But
yeah, I guess that's another good way to put it. If it's a one-time thing, if it's like, oh, man, we really messed that one play up.
Yeah, the linebacker misread that.
That's probably going to be, man, we probably didn't have enough time to prepare. If you're getting whipped over and over and over doing basic things, that's more of a systemic problem in the program, I would say.
Well, I think one thing that's going to be interesting is, and during, especially given this this time that we've went through, is, you know, Pruitt hired, although he was on the staff, Pruitt hired a guy as his strength coach that has never been a director of strength conditioning yet, and AJ Artist. And AJ may be killing it over there, but, you know, there's always things that you have to learn on a job, no matter how much you maybe assisted or helped. When you're the head guy, when you're running the show, there's always things that you're going to learn, mistakes you're going to make. And, you know, does that play into a factor? What's our strength? Because, you know, when Butch changed strength coaches from Dave Lawson to...
It was a nightmare.
He took his assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a nightmare. Now, there was other factors. Butch, I think, told them that not to work him as hard and cut down a lot of the volume of their work in the weight room. But, you know, it can go bad. And so that's another thing I'm interested to see is what our strength levels look like. Do we look physically ready from a strength and power standpoint to play?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jay. Thanks for the call. I think that'll be something that, like, that shouldn't – that's more long-term anyway. Like, if you know, how these guys have worked all offseason, and it should be something you can kind of tell.
And that's what's tough, too. I mean, normally – they're on campus for months working out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw artists releasing those videos daily, like, hey, I mean, I'm sure they were talking to him, sending him, hey, do this today. Oh, yeah, I definitely ran that 3 miles, coach. Did they?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of personal responsibility that goes into, you know, each player in this offseason specifically. And that goes back to kind of team chemistry, right? Team leadership.
Yep.
Holding guys accountable. You know, if a guy showed up and he was overweight, do his teammates get on him and motivate him to do all the work he needs to between now and the start of the season to get back in shape, to get more in shape? I mean, Jeremy Pruitt's bragged that the team culture is really, really good leadership. But I think that's a really good question by Jay. And I was thinking about that even before he called in. I don't know exactly how to judge strength and conditioning, but – and I don't know if it was necessarily strength and conditioning, but you saw Navy really struggle because they didn't tackle.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen some guys, you know, get hurt maybe because they weren't in the best of shape. So, yeah, like that's going to be – again, I don't know exactly how you put your finger on any one scenario and point blame one way or the other just because we don't know. But I would hope that Tennessee, yeah, physically is not just getting whipped by – God, especially the first two opponents, first three.
Over under on amount of hamstring injuries.
First two.
Over under on the amount of hamstring injuries.
I don't like talking. I don't like doing prop bets on injuries. Not a fan.
It's been a thing for the NFL.
I know. They worked out less though than a lot of college teams did. Like they reported to camp way after these guys were on campus.
Yeah, I have no idea why the hamstring's such a. I mean, like you would think that by this point of what we know about the human body, that these guys would. I don't know if it's just because they're all stronger, like all of their muscles are stronger, and because the hamstring takes so much stress, like getting off, you know, with the starting and the stopping in football, whereas like if you go play soccer, you kind of start running around at a slower speed just to start. You know, like you're jogging around all the time.
Yeah, you're ramping up in a play, not necessarily
when
stop to start.
When the through ball is played and you've got to go full speed, you've been jogging around constantly. You're loose. You're the blood is flowing, and even like you said, you're usually running at 70, 80, 90, and then 99, like to go get the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas football, I mean, you literally start from a dead stop and then, you know, take off. And
not to mention, usually right after that, you're hitting somebody.
Yeah. So, it's crazy to me though. I'm talking about the NFL where you get the injury reports. How many hamstring problems there have been? I don't know if it's they report them more. I think it's all of that. I think we get more reports about who's hurt a hamstring. Used to be you just hide it, tough it out if you can mm-hmm. play. Like Mike Evans, for example, he played for the Bucs. If it was possible that he never told anyone he had hurt his hamstring, I don't think you would have even noticed watching the game that he had an injured hamstring and almost didn't play. So maybe 10 years ago, you had guys that did that and you just never knew. You never put it out.
Right.
Now with you know, with how you have to report everything, with just the way, you know, it just is. I don't know. Or I don't know if those guys are just their quads are just so much stronger, and they're, you know, you try and strengthen the hamstring as much as you can, but now that because of that, now you're running faster, you're cutting harder than ever. I mean, talked about they show those Jerry Jeudy clips of how hard he's planting and cutting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe these guys just being so elite, finely tuned. It's like a
violent.
It's like a race car, right? Like a race car breaks down more than your everyday whatever car, right? Because it's got to push so much more power than just driving to work every day. So it's, I don't know. That's kind of a good illustration, I guess. But I mean, I hope we don't see any more of those problems. Like all of that stuff should be the same. I mean, these guys know how to stretch. They know how to do all that. That's part of their training.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean there's not going to be injuries.
Right. I'm just saying, I don't think you should be at a disadvantage for soft tissue injuries, really. Now being gassed, I think there was a really good point made in one of the NFL games. I think it was Chris Collinsworth, actually, on the Thursday night. He said, it doesn't matter if you get one series or you play the whole first quarter or whatever. The first time you play in a real game, for whatever reason, you are, even if you've done a ton of cardio all offseason,
mm-hmm.
and he was a wide receiver, you just feel gassed. It's just the first time. And I think it's not so much the body. I think it's how it's the first game and you're so excited to be back and playing that you push more adrenaline mm-hmm. and it just saps you. I think it's more of that feel. It's what happens to some teams in really big games where they come out on fire and then all of a sudden they look like they're just dead by halfway through the second quarter because they like kind of overexerted the mm-hmm. the hype almost. So I don't know. Could see some of that first game too. Managing that balance between making sure the guys are ready with full energy but not overhyped to the point where they're just gassed by the second quarter will be really tough for all these coaches as they start the season. But that's a pretty typical thing in college football, no preseason anyway. We'll come back with more. Hour two rolls on right here on 3 and Out. Welcome back into the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fan Run Radio. Hour number two as we roll on here. I'm blown away by this 24/7 Sports depth chart that got put out for Tennessee on defense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking through the, you know, linebackers now, the corners, the safeties, star. A lot of this makes sense, but the defensive line, I think I would have gone 0-for-3 maybe, or maybe 1-for-3.
Really?
All right.
Say when this was released.
20 hours ago. It's Patrick Brown trying to project what Tennessee might put out on Monday, which is when they'll release their depth chart. So here we go. There's some hints in here too. I think this is what they're doing. I'm not sure. I don't want to speak for people, but I do know that a lot of these, you know, quote-unquote insiders, they can't just come out and tell you this person's out for COVID or this person's out for contact tracing or this person's injured. Normally, that's what we're dealing with. This person's injured, but I can't really talk about it. The coaches will get mad because mm-hmm. they don't want the opponents to really know how injured they are and how many practices they've missed. But I feel like there's hints in here about who's been practicing a lot, who's been practicing a little. Defensive end, So here's the way we're talking about the 3-4 for Jeremy Pruitt. A defensive end, a nose tackle, and obviously another defensive end. Usually, you know, one end is more of your bigger kind of, I mean, really like a, almost like a hybrid, and then the other defensive end is more of a smaller kind of, not small by any stretch, but a more like your pass rushing type of guy out of those three. And then obviously in the 3-4, the outside linebacker, you should have one outside linebacker that's basically a pass rush specialist. And then the other guy might be more of a, the strong side guy might be more of a thumper. So anyway, defensive end, Latrell Bumpus.
While they said he's had a good camp.
While the rest of Tennessee's defense is mostly settled from a starter standpoint, Tennessee's defensive line is very difficult to project at this point, thanks to a combination of players missing practice and the group's struggles against what is shaping up to be a very good offensive line. We've talked a lot about that, right? We have no idea if the defensive line's struggling because the offensive line's good, or they just struggling because they're struggling and the offensive line's above average. Who knows? The starting trio and pass depth chart projections won't be projected as starters in this one, and it's unclear how the depth will shake out or even how many players first-year position coach Jimmy Brumbaugh will trust to be part of his rotation. Though it largely played a starting trio and second trio, Tennessee had its three defensive line positions listed at 3 and 4 deep on the depth chart last season, so that's the routine we're taking here. Bumpus and Blakely both have drawn praise from Pruitt for how they've played and are going to have roles. Thomas, that's Amari Thomas, the freshman. Thomas, the former top 100 prospect out of Memphis, is still a work in progress, but in this particular season, everybody will have to be ready. Mm-hmm. So they have Brown has Bumpus starting, and then his backups as Jaquan Blakely and Amari Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move to the nose. I would have thought that Greg Emerson would be the nose tackle. He started 9 of the first 10 games last season at the nose.
Hmm.
Obviously.
Really? Yeah. Emerson did?
Yeah, according to him. Yeah. Brown, in this article, though, for GoVols247, says the projected starter is redshirt sophomore Karat Garland. Garland, who started 4 of the final 5 games of the season, was a player Pruitt singled out last week for his showing in Tennessee's shortened scrimmage, and he looks like a candidate to start up front.
So he stole the job late last year.
And we're going to go back with him.
Okay. I can get on with that.
Emerson started 9 of the first 10, so he's listed as the backup. And obviously on the defensive line, you're going to rotate a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
This isn't like quarterback, right? I mean, you know, they're all going to play, and especially this year, they all have to be ready to play. He mentions Emmett Gooden, of course, got dismissed from the program. He also listed as Aubrey Solomon as the secondary backup for this position. Here's what I thought was interesting, though. Solomon, a returning starter from 2019, has been limited for the majority of the preseason.
That's it? Just limited?
That's it.
Okay.
He's been injured before. That reads like injury to me, but I don't know. I don't know what that means. If he's not projected to be a starter, I would assume that means injury, and not like if you were just COVID quarantined, but you've been the best player, I would assume they'd still plan on you starting as long as you're good to go on game week.
Right.
Or, you know, for game day. He also mentioned Elijah Simmons, and, you know, GoVols247, you can subscribe to read all this stuff, but I'm not going to read the whole article to you. But the other defensive end spot.
Well, we know he's big and scary.
But the other defensive end spot is Matthew Butler as a projected starter there.
Well, he played a lot last year. Redshirt senior, correct?
Apparently, he was the definitely senior. Doesn't have the R. He did say redshirt sophomore on the other one, so I'm assuming just a true senior. You mentioned that Butler was the leading tackler among defensive linemen last season. Here's what's interesting, though. Notice I didn't mention Aubrey Solomon or Daryl Middleton as a starter at any three of these spots. He says, Butler was probably the toughest omission from previous versions, and Pruitt said earlier this week he's performing well. Tennessee's leading tackler, I mentioned that. It said Middleton has missed a chunk of practice time.
COVID?
I don't know, I guess.
Probably. Yep, tea leaves.
And then goes to, and then jumps straight to Savion Williams, who he has listed as a secondary backup. So he's got Butler starting, Middleton as the backup, Savion Williams as the next backup, and they even list Dominic Bailey as a freshman behind those guys.
Aubrey Solomon was listed where?
As a third string nose tackle.
Fascinating.
Is that not weird?
Very.
Yeah.
Third string, huh?
Well, second string or nose tackle.
Okay.
Yeah. But with Greg Emerson, who
I thought Solomon started.
And defensive end, right?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Maybe bulked up. Maybe he's one of those guys that came in out of shape.
I don't know.
Hey, you're too big now. You got to play nose.
It's very, very weird. Very, very strange. I don't know how much to read into. Missed a lot of practice here. Been out with this. But we have heard what Middleton and Solomon were the ones that have been kind of. Coming back for next year. Not opting out this year.
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe they'll be rounding into form and hopefully can solidify the rotation with that group. We do have a lot of bodies there, so hopefully that'll improve. But I thought that was very, very weird, to say the least.
I'm surprised.
And that's a position that we've heard is like.
Well, keep in mind, I'm not knocking Patrick. I'm saying that's one guy's projections.
Right.
Things change. Who knows what it'll actually look like? They released that Monday or Sunday? Is it Monday?
Monday is what he said. I can't remember. I remember one year with Butch, they released the depth chart, I guess, for week one. And I just happen to remember the URL that they used, like what the slash was, like utsports.com/ mm-hmm. like depth chart. WK1 whatever slash, and it had like the opponent, and so on like a day early I was like, I wonder when they released that depth chart, and so I just went back and changed like the WK to like 2 and the new opponent, and like it wasn't even out yet, but whoever puts that on the website, and like they were way on top of it, they already had it out, and I was like, Tennessee depth chart. They hadn't released it. Was I don't know, it was weird. But
a lot of oars.
Oh, I mean, of course, it didn't tell us anything. But it was nice to get that early sneak peek. We'll come back. We'll go to the linebackers. Makes a little more sense. But we'll kind of tell you how that's shaking out next. Stick with us right here. Final segment, hour two next. Welcome back to Three and Out right here on Fan Run Radio. Talking some Tennessee football. Talk to all this hour. So if you missed earlier portions, check out the podcast and make sure to subscribe on iTunes so you get those directly to your device and get all the shows here at Fox Sports Knoxville.
Okay, so the defensive line projections were a bit weird.
Yep, the rest of it makes more sense. Outside linebacker, you got Kevon Bennett, who we have been really high on. I mean,
he might not have known what he was doing, but he got there fast.
As soon as he could play last year, I mean, he just jumped off the screen with his speed. You got projected backups, Morvin Joseph or J.J. Peterson.
Real quick, a little bit of breaking news.
All right.
Per Clay Travis, the Big Ten has unanimously voted to bring football back. Announcement should come this morning.
Unanimously voted. They're a bunch of lying scumbags.
Yep, scumbags. ABC News has also confirmed the conference will announce today that Big Ten football, including Penn State, will return next month. Next month.
Yeah. All right. About a month away, probably. October 17th.
That would be correct.
What a bleep show. Because this 1 month made all the difference. Well, it's only going to be like 3 weeks from the SEC to the Big Ten. We're going to have to... I really hope we're not debating a 7-1 Big Ten team with a 9-1 SEC team, right? Like, come on. That's what's going to be. It's going to be a mess.
Anyway, continue with the depth chart. I'm sure there'll be more coming out in the next hour or so on that. I said they go at 10:01. The official announcement might, but hey, at least we're getting the leaks.
They definitely punched that Nebraska guy. They're like, well, we're definitely pushing it back now.
You're probably right. Now they're going to get all day on all the networks. Oh, they bravely stood in the face of science.
See, I thought they might try and kind of dump it so that
hey, we're back.
Football would just be back, but people want, like, kill them again. You know, just, like, dump it on a Friday. That way by Monday it's back, but nobody really needs to pile on because there's so much other stuff to be doing. But maybe they want the limelight. Went Wednesday morning for the best. Tuesday is like overreaction from the doubleheader Monday, and now they'll have all day Wednesday to themselves, and then Thursday football starts back again. I don't know.
Now waiting on the Pac-12.
You're going to keep waiting?
I don't know. Southern Cal's making a push to play.
Yeah, they'll play.
They're talking about it.
Pac-12 might announce later today.
They've been lockstep the whole time.
Pac-12 offices are still in San Francisco, and right now, like, you want to talk about people living in a bubble. I mean, their entire city's just surrounded by smoke. I don't think Larry Scott's even thinking.
It's called Zoom, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking.
Internet
that
still works.
We're playing football this fall.
Read the room, fellas. So stupid. It was stupid to cancel in the first place. It was stupid not to think people wouldn't be upset. It was stupid to realize that universities were going to lose millions and millions of dollars and be unhappy about it. Duh.
Yep. There you go. All right, we got Kevon Bennett. I can't wait to see Morvin Joseph, see if he cracks the rotation and win. He's a true freshman. At the other outside linebacker positions, Ben DeAndre Johnson, he's a senior. But now this is listed as Johnson or Roman Harrison. I don't even know why they put the ors in there when Pruitt releases it. Have you noticed that every single time there's an or, the first player is the one that starts the game?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you might as well. I mean, basically, it's just a signal that this battle is close.
Yeah.
That both these guys might play.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's, I don't think it's for us. I think it's for the player.
Mm.
Hey, you've done a really good job. This is not an easy decision. I'm going to give you credit on the depth chart.
Projected backups, Tyler Barron or John Mincy. Tyler Barron, another freshman. I'm excited to see if we, you know, gets to play a lot early.
October 24th for the Big Ten.
24th.
Yeah.
Okay. So 4 weeks.
Who are the two starters in the middle? Obviously, Hank T and...
Hank got to the middle yet. Started outside. So, at inside, Hank T. Yes, starting. Backup, Aaron Beasley.
All-American.
Inside linebacker, number
Beasley's
two.
His backup?
Yeah.
Mm.
Corvarius Crouch, backed up by...
The Bull.
Jeremy Banks.
The Bull.
I'm a little worried about that backup pair, Beasley and Banks. Like, that's...
Beasley and Banks. Sounds like a mutual fund manager, a group.
Or attorneys. Beasley and Banks are on your side. At corner, Bryce Thompson at one spot, Warren Burrell backing him up, Alante Taylor at the other, Kenneth George Jr.
I don't even remember Beasley playing last year.
I don't either.
Sophomore, 6'1", 225, Franklin, Georgia.
He began his career at safety.
Maybe that's why.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And apparently he might be fourth on that pecking order. So your boy, Jeremy Banks, is first up.
That's unsurprising.
To spell the other two. And Solon Page the third still there. But that's when we had to go to back up inside linebackers recently, it has not been good the last few.
Well, they've gotten a lot of extra reps this camp, so they'll be better. Okay. They'll be ready to go. Right? Right, guys? Right, Davey?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, I remember these quotes from a while back, but Derek Ansley said earlier in camp he feels good about all top four corners for Tennessee. So that's Bryce Thompson.
We're going to need some coverage sacks.
Who's going to he's going to be number zero this year. So remember that.
It's kind of cool.
Easy to find. Warren Burrell backing him up. Obviously, he was kind of the long player that made some waves.
He started the season last year because Taylor was in the doghouse.
Alante Taylor starting at the other spot with Kenneth George Jr., another guy that got a lot of run last year, backing him up. Now, at star, it's interesting because it's kind of the opposite of what happened on the defensive line. Sean Schamberger was a starting star last year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's who's listed as a starting star here this year on this depth chart, but... it felt like during camp they've played a ton of different people there, and you know, and maybe that's just cross training, and obviously mm-hmm. the star has to move all over the place, so you kind of need to do that. Projected backup, Danico Slaughter.
At the star?
Yeah.
Okay.
All I said, Houston, was that's a lot of S's. Sean Schamberger starting at star. Yeah.
I'm with you.
At safety, got Jalen McCullough, backed up with Keyshawn Lawrence and Tyus Fields, and then Trayvon Flowers, backed up by Theo Jackson and Cheyenne LaBrusa.
So McCullough.
Oh, yeah, he's starting. Tank's starting. We got Hank and
Tank. That's my guy.
Hank and Tank.
Hank and Tank. Oh, baby.
And Banks.
Hank, Tank, Banks.
I feel like they've got, that should be three safeties well, that know what they're doing.
Yeah, and apparently Keyshawn Lawrence is looking really good, too. And as he starts to learn it, they think he could make a jump real quick.
So come back. We'll kick off hour number three. Stick with us right here on 3 and Out.